Scotch Potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. On today's show, I'm going to be talking about the new films Avatar, The Way of Water, and doing some award season catch-up with The Fablemans, The Menu, Triangle of Sadness, and She Said. I'm also going to be talking about some news, the trailer park, and the Home Cinema Roundup featuring Who Killed Santa? A Murderville Murder Mystery. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@thatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, I'm at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
The first piece of news is I've got a giveaway coming up. If you were one of the people who liked Halloween Ends, I tended to like Halloween Ends, and I know that it was a polarizing movie, but it is available on Blu-ray at the end of the month, and for one lucky listener, you can win a Halloween Ends Blu-ray. It is very simple to enter. Just send an email to halloweenends@fatguysatthemovies.com. That's HalloweenEnds@FatGuysAtTheMovies.com. I may give special consideration if you can pitch an effective way to bring Tom Atkins back into the Halloween series. Now, for those of you who don't know, Tom Atkins was the star of Halloween 3, Season of the Witch, easily the best Halloween movie that was ever made in the history of cinema. So let's find a way to get his own new trilogy, whether it's directed by David Gordon Green or not. But yes, Halloween Ends at fatguysatthemovies.com. Send me an email, pitch an idea for Tom Atkins to come back, or just send an email. You may win either way. The next piece of news I want to talk about is the 28th annual Critics' Choice Award nominations have been announced. Now, the ceremony is going to be airing on the CW at 7 p.m. on Sunday, January 15th, in about a month. And it's going to be hosted by Chelsea Handler. Now, I actually get a chance to be involved in this. I help nominate and I vote for some of these. And it's a good list. Some of the things I don't necessarily agree with, but that's the way it is every year. Leading the list of nominations is Everything Everywhere All at Once has 14 nominations, which, by the way, that's by A24. Can I just point out how strong A24's slate was this year? They have a phenomenal award slate. Now, that's not winning all these awards, but of course, obviously, there's Everything Everywhere All at Once. There was stuff like Men. There was stuff like Marcel the Shell with Shoes On, one of my favorite movies of the year. You also had that 1-2 punch of X and Pearl. They had a great, fantastic slate of films. And A24 has always been this neat little artistic company that puts out some really unique stuff. Now, other big hits on the nomination list, you have The Fablemans, which got 11 nominations, Babylon, which got 9, not wild about that one, and The Banshees of Inisherin got 9 nominations, and that's one of my favorite movies of the year as well. So it's nice to see that. If you're curious about the best picture, I'm not going to go through and dig through all the actors and actresses and all the other smaller categories. You can go to criticschoice.com and check that out yourself. But for the best picture, the nominees are Avatar, The Way of Water, Babylon, The Banshees of Inisherin, Elvis, Everything Everywhere All at Once, The Fablemans, Glass Onions, a Knives Out mystery, RRR, which is that Indian film, it's available on Netflix right now, Tar, Top Gun Maverick, and Women Talking, which is actually, if you're going to look at what the 8 or 9 or 10 nominees for the Oscars are going to be, you're going to be pretty much picking from that list. That's a really good comprehensive list of what critics are saying are the best movies of the year. I don't agree with all of them. Oh, yeah, sure. I love The Banshees of Inisherin. And I certainly think Everything Everywhere All at Once deserves to be on there. Glass Onion was cool. RRR is a lot of fun. Top Gun Maverick, you know, it's a sensationalized pop culture movie. But, I mean, it really... Talk about a movie that redefined cinema for a summer. That was Top Gun Maverick. So, and then there's some smaller... artistic stuff in there as well. So be sure to watch the 20th Annual Critics' Choice Awards on the CW at 7 p.m. on Sunday, January 15th. Finally, in terms of the news, I want to talk a little bit about this shakeup going on at Warner Brothers. And it's not just on like HBO Max, because HBO Max is pulling shows. Like apparently they're going to be pulling Westworld off of the list, which I, it confounds me. I mean, I know why they're doing it. They want to then sell it to another streaming service. They don't want to provide it for free. They want to charge another streaming service like Netflix to put it on there. And that's, I think, why they're trimming some of their content. Some of it they're doing for tax mitigation. But I think that's what they're trying to do. But it doesn't make sense how to market HBO Max or when it's going to be called Max when they finally finish it up. What are they going to be like? Oh, hey, pay a premium price and get less content that you had before. Oh, wait, no, you get all this garbage reality TV, but you don't get the cool stuff. You don't get the HBO shows. I think they're trying to find a way to resell those. But the big news that came out is Henry Cavill is out as Superman. After that big announcement he made with Dwayne Johnson after Black Adam, saying he's back as Superman. Turns out he's not. James Gunn is writing a new Superman story, which is going to take a younger Superman as he's getting a job and working through the Daily Planet as a journalist in Metropolis. So, I mean, they're basically just killing the Snyderverse, which is weird because I don't know what they're going to do with Aquaman 2 and The Flash. That still is all up in the air. They could scrap that all together, but I mean, that's a huge amount of money they spent on it. Also, Patty Jenkins has come out and said in terms of the Wonder Woman 3 thing, she stepped away, but she is still on the books to do Rogue Squadron whenever Lucasfilm gets around to doing that. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. The first trailer I want to talk about is 65, which is in theaters on March 10th.
Charter 373. This is Commander Mills. My ship was hit by an undocumented asteroid, transporting 35 passengers on a long-range exploratory mission. Send help.
We've crash-landed on an uncharted celestial body.
I've located one survivor.
Child. There's something alien out there.
It's a cool setup of a trailer. The problem that could be an issue with this movie is it seems like just the title itself, I don't feel comfortable explaining what the title means. If you watch the full trailer, you can go online and look at the full trailer, it explains it. But I'm here thinking to myself, well, this has got to come as a surprise halfway through the movie. Why would you name a movie? Why would it be like naming Empire Strikes Back as Darth Vader is Luke's father, the movie? Or if Orson Welles said, I'm going to call Citizen Kane the sled movie. You know, I mean, it's a spoiler from the beginning, and it sounds like it's an interesting idea. It sounds like it's going to be a neat film. But I'm at this point, I'm like, well, what is there to get new out of it? Or is there something more to it? Because the name of the movie, the title of the movie, at least sounds to me like a big spoiler. It sounds like you're probably not going to get the reason for the title of the movie for, like, I don't know, an hour into the movie, maybe? Who knows? The next one I want to hit really quickly, it's not a great sounding trailer, it's a great trailer to watch, though, is Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse, which is coming to theaters on June 2nd.
Miles!
Want to get out of here?
Wherever you go from here, you have to promise to take care of that little boy for me. Make sure he never forgets where he came from.
Who do you think you are? Really?
We are supposed to be the good guys.
We are.
I loved that first Spider-Verse movie. I mean, way more than Spider-Man No Way Home. I mean, Spider-Man No Way Home was fun. But if you want to talk about a multiverse movie, that animated film Into the Spider-Verse was way better. And that's just kind of par for the course when it comes to filmmaking. The animation people get it way more than the live action or CGI people do. And this Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse looks like it's going to be a really good movie. I'm very much looking forward to it. I'm excited to see it. This is on my list of one of the more anticipated movies of 2023. Coming up next on Fat Guys at the Movies, we're going to be talking about The Menu and Triangle of Sadness.
A mean one,
Mr. Grinch. You really are.
And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's jump into the movie reviews. What I'm doing right now is the only big movie that's out this week is Avatar: The Way of Water. And I've got a whole show to talk about. And I really don't want to talk about Avatar for an hour on the radio. There's a lot of other stuff that I can talk about. And I figure over the last couple weeks, there have been several movies that I've missed. Either it wasn't screened for me, or I wasn't available to go, or it's just an award film that came and went and poof, it was gone. So I'm going to do a little bit of catch up here because I got to watch a lot of these award films before the end of the year anyways. And I want to talk about The Menu. What's funny is I didn't realize this was going to be an award film, but it got some nominations from the Golden Globes, which doesn't necessarily mean anything because the Golden Globes has nominated some garbage before, but I thought that was kind of interesting. And then there was another friend of mine who wanted me to do a radio spot for him on his show and talk about The Menu. So I took a chance to watch it. And it's still going strong in theaters a month later. Let's talk about The Menu. A group of elites visit the private island restaurant of one of the world's top chefs, not knowing the dangers of what's on the menu.
Welcome to Hawthorne.
Here we are, family.
He's not just a chef. He's a storyteller. The game is trying to guess what the overarching theme of the entire meal is going to be. You won't know till the end.
Who are you?
I am Margo. Why do you care?
I have to know if you're with us or with them. This menu has been painstakingly planned.
With all the horror movies that have been out this year, and I had to go see several of them in the theater, I ended up seeing trailers for The Menu. And what's interesting about it is I always get squenchy when I see these trailers because I worry that they're spoiling too much away. I mean, you heard me bellyaching about 65 earlier in the show, not wanting to spoil that. And I get that way when I watch trailers because trailers can be extremely spoilery. There have been trailers I've seen that give away everything but the last 10 minutes of a movie, which is stupid. I mean, the Invitation was like that. So The Menu, I thought, gave away a lot, but it also didn't give it away. And I thought it was well done enough that there were still some surprises in there, even if you've seen the trailer. Now, Nicholas Holt plays this guy who bought it's like $1,200 a plate, and he brings a date with him, but it's a different person than we'd originally signed up for, which causes a problem. I'm not going to go into that, but it causes a problem because I think the restaurateur wanted to have the knowledge of who all was eating there. And so there was this fly in the ointment. And what makes this movie work is its cast. I mean, actually, it has a really good cast. I mean, held together by Ralph Fiennes as the chef. And you've got Anya Taylor-Joy as the date that of Nicholas Holt. And there's other people who do a really good job. Judith Light shows up in this. I was like, is that the woman from Who's the Boss? But yeah, so she shows up on it. John Leguizamo is in it, and he's got a relatively small part. Now, one of the things this thing does is it targets elites. It targets haute cuisine. And most people in the world haven't sampled haute cuisine. I've eaten fancy stuff before, but this goes beyond fancy. This is the high-end, five-star Michelin restaurants that you need to have connections to get, and they have a waiting list a mile long, paying hundreds and hundreds of dollars for very, very little food. And most people, like me, find haute cuisine and all that stuff kind of BS. It's overblown. It's sort of like the fashion industry. It's kind of stupid. But it's fun to make fun of the people who are into it. And one of the characters, played by Janet McTeer, is a restaurant critic who kind of put this restaurateur on the map. It shows their hypocrisy and it grinds its gears against these sort of stuffy people, especially those that are very, very wealthy, those who can buy or sell, you know, any one of us. And I appreciate that, but this is more than just class envy. This is more than just grinding your gears against people who think they're better than you. There's some cleverness to it. And there's actually some real interesting character stuff that goes on behind the actors. In particular, Ralph Fiennes. Without Ralph Fiennes, he deserves the Golden Globe nomination he got for this because he is what makes that story work. And I don't want to give anything away, but as you learn more and more about what goes on and what the plans are, it works best with him at the role. So it's a little bit of a mystery, and it plays around with films that have been done before that share similar themes. I don't want to name the films because it would give stuff away. But sort of like how Barbarian, there are elements of Barbarian that I remember watching thinking, oh, that's from this film, and that's from that film. And this one kind of feels the same way. So I'm going to say that, you know, The Menu, it's clever and it's creepy, and the satire skewers the elite, and it plays well into other similar films. I'm going to say it totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent!
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about Triangle of Sadness. Various wealthy clients enjoy an acerbic pleasure cruise that goes horribly awry.
The success of a luxury cruise mainly depends on you. I don't want to hear anybody saying no.
The sails. Do you think it's possible to wash them?
I don't think that's possible, ma'am, because this is a motorized vessel.
Yeah.
A Russian capitalist. And an American communist.
On a $250 million luxury yacht.
The ship is going under.
I deliberately put this to review right after I talked about The Menu, because it deals with a lot of the same themes and ideas. It presents these characters who can buy and sell anybody. These people are very, very wealthy, and they have this expensive pleasure cruise. I mean, I'm not talking about a carnival cruise. This is we rented a yacht for a couple dozen people. And they get the highest of the high class. They get people at their beck and call. And it's meant to poke fun at and needle the people who put the value of money above all else. And it shows their hypocrisy. It shows their indignation. It shows their treatment of other people as a commodity. And it shows how that can break down in sort of that Lord of the Flies setting. And I love those ideas. I think those are cool. The problem is the way they present this is just garbage. I mean, there's not a single likable character. And I'm okay with a movie that has unlikable characters, but it's something like Tar. If you remember the movie Tar, when I talked about that, there was no joy in not liking the character either. It was just an unpleasant time. I didn't want to spend 2.5 hours with these people. I find it just depressing. It's very European flavored. And when I say European, that hoity-toity, snooty European movie. The movie's gunning for the people who think they're more important and more enlightened than everybody else. But in doing so, the movie itself is snooty. And I get what they're trying to achieve, but the attempts of being oh so clever yield a pretentious garbage trough. It's just the movie's unpleasant, and the points it's trying to make, it belabors, it takes forever to get there, the characters are dumb, I mean, in terms of they don't act smart, and beyond just being out of touch because they have so much money, they can do whatever they want. It's very judgmental, but at the same time, its plot and its character and its pointed delivery is just as guilty as looking down on its own audience, so I did not like Triangle of Sadness. I thought it was garbage. It's getting a lot of award nominations, but did not like it. I did not enjoy it. It totally sucks.
It sucks.
Coming up next on Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr, I'm going to be talking about Avatar, The Way of Water, and The Fabelmans.
I'm dreaming of a white Christmas. Just like the ones I used to
know. And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's gear up and put on our scuba suits and jump in the water and talk about the movie that everybody's talking about this week. And that is Avatar, The Way of Water. More than a decade after Avatar took place, Jake Scully starts a family as a Na'vi, but must join forces with a tribe in the ocean to fight off a new wave of invaders.
We cannot let you bring your war here.
Outcast. That's all they see.
I see you.
The Way of Water connects all things. Before your birth, and after your death.
This is our home!
It's been 13 years since Avatar came out. And now we finally got the sequel. And this is going to make money. Of course it's going to make money. Look, it's going to make tons of money its opening weekend. What you got to look for is legs. If it burns off quickly. Whereas Avatar just sustained. I mean, it didn't even make $100 million its opening weekend, but it just sustained. It ended up making, what, $700 and some million domestically in its initial run? Which is still impressive. I mean, that's what Top Gun made, but you're talking about 12 years of inflation on this thing. So there's a lot to break down, because it's a 3-hour and 9-minute movie. And very few movies deserve to be 3 hours and 9 minutes. And I don't think this movie does. I will say this, though. It's James Cameron, and at least he has an efficiency to his directing, even if it is lumbersome and takes a while. I mean, this movie, at the very least, this movie justifies its existence by giving you the spectacle. But let's talk about that spectacle, because the big thing most people worry about, they don't even care about the story. They're more worried about what it's going to look like. And look, it's Avatar. It looks amazing. It looks beautiful. I was fortunate enough. I was in New York last week and I got a chance to see it at the big IMAX theater in a high frame rate 3D. So I got the best viewing of it ever. I'll talk about that high frame rate in a minute, but the visual effects are mind-boggling. I mean, there is no line between what's real and not real. And I mean, a good amount of it is completely manufactured in a computer, but there's also other moments in the movie where they got regular walking, talking humans interacting with the avatars. And I mean, the avatars, there was a little bit of uncanny valley with the design in the original movie. You don't get that in this one. I mean, you still get some weird looking artifacting, but it is very, very rare. And the elements, especially the water elements and the depth and the 3D, his use of 3D is it's beautiful. It's a gorgeous movie. It really transports you to another world. Now, I saw it in high frame rate. I do not recommend that. I'm not a big fan of high frame rate. I've seen several movies in that way. I remember seeing one of the Hobbit movies that way. And there's that Gemini Man, the one with Will Smith. If you don't mind that soap opera look, it's okay. One of the things he does is he ramps it up. At times it changes from regular, you know, like 24 frames a second rate to 30 to 48. And he changes, he ramps it up here and there. And in some scenes, like the big wide sweeping scenes where you've got the Na'vi riding the dragon or going through the ocean and you got these big, huge widescreen moments, those look great. And that actually works. The high frame rate works in that. But he uses it for some other scenes. A lot of scenes where there's a lot of action, people moving quickly across the screen. And in some of them, it seems inappropriate. Like there's scenes where like the kids, the Na'vi kids are wrestling. And it's just a shot of them in their little tent or whatever. But it puts it in high frame rate so that it's a smoother transition. But that looks weird and that's jarring. So I don't think they've got that figured out yet. And it's not something that needs to be in the movie through the entire thing. That's kind of a problem with it. But as gorgeous as the movie is, the story has some major issues. I mean, first of all, it starts off and it gives you this background of what happened in the last 10, 12 years since the last time we saw these. And they're just throwing stuff at you. And there's stuff that seems like they're just making it up and pulling it out of their pants. And as I've heard that kind of draws some stuff from some of the games and ancillary materials, but it just doesn't, it seems like they're just like, it's like this 6-year-old kid going, yeah, and so now we need this character. So we have this baby was born, you know, it also is way too crowded. It's too many characters. And I think part of that is you don't have a studio coming in going, James, okay, you got to dial this back. You can't do, it shouldn't be over 3 hours. I want it to be, well, make it 2 hours and 40. You know, I don't think there was that pushback from 20th Century and Disney that he should have gotten. So he bloats it a little bit. Also, Zoe Saldana's character is terrible. I mean, she's just boring. And this is James Cameron, who's known for writing great action heroine characters. You know, she's not Sarah Connor. She wasn't terribly well-developed in the original Avatar. And in this one, she's just literally just an emotional gas bag. I mean, she's constantly screaming or yelling or crying or freaking out, but there's no depth to her character and there's no characterization for her. And on top of it, there's some really god-awful dialogue in it. I mean, we're talking George Lucas Episode 1 dialogue, and I can forgive that, But he really should have had somebody help him punch up the dialogue a little bit better. But I mean, still, it's a thrilling movie. Like the original movie, you know, the last 40, 50 minutes, an hour or so, just makes it worth it to see. But it's absolutely a theatrical experience, and I'm going to give it a really good thing. I mean, visually, it's mind-blowing, but with a fractured and overcrowded story. The sequel still manages to provide a great spectacle, but it's not a perfect film. I liked it. I didn't love it. I liked it. But I'm still going to say it rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent!
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about The Fabelmans really quickly. I missed this one, and it's released back in Thanksgiving. So I figured I'd catch up on it. Steven Spielberg directs his own semi-autobiographical journey as a child who wants to make movies.
In this family, it's the scientists versus the artists. Sammy's on my team, takes after me.
What kind of movie are we gonna make?
You dismiss what he does that's playful or imaginative. You could afford to be a little encouraging.
You can't just love something, you also have to take care of it.
It's more important than your hobby.
Can you stop calling it a hobby?
Look, I love Spielberg. I grew up with Spielberg. I mean, I was born in 1971, so I'm an Amblin kid. I watched Close Encounters of the Third Kind. I remember when E.T. came out. I remember watching, the Indiana Jones movies. I love his stuff. I think he's a great director. This one, I think, is a good movie. The Fabelmans is a good movie. It's well done. But the problem is, it's just a story of somebody's life. And you really get a look into Spielberg's soul. For Spielberg fans, I get that. And you see where he's inspired by different things. Like he goes to watch The Greatest Show on Earth, which was the one with Charlton Heston, which is what inspired him to give Indiana Jones his outfit of the leather jacket and the fedora. And you see how his love of cinema and his sort of like the points in his life that turned him into the artist that he is. And those things are neat, but they're sort of film geek stuff. And one of the things with movies like this, and I felt the same way about Armageddon Time, although it's a very different movie. It's basically a director going, hey, sit here for 2 or 2.5 hours and listen to what it was like when I grew up. And there's some interesting stuff in there. You know, unfortunately, we see the anti-Semitism that Spielberg faced, and that crap's rearing its ugly head again. That's an unfortunate aspect of society, but it's Spielberg gazing at his navel. I mean, and it's a very well-shot navel, but he's still gazing at his own navel. And I just didn't find it this amazing film. It's the life of Spielberg. It's what made Spielberg who he is as a filmmaker and as a director, and that's great. But I don't feel like it brought a whole lot to it. I mean, because it's him just telling the story of his life. And if you've ever read a biography of Steven Spielberg, you're going to love this movie. You know, I mean, it's a very intimate film from a premier director. But the story falls into these tired and expected tropes of a biopic. But it's well done in its journey. So I'm going to say that it kind of rocks, but it's not my favorite of the year by any stretch of the imagination.
It kind of rocks.
Coming up next on Fat Guys at the Movies, I'm going to be reviewing She Said, and I'm going to be doing the Home Cinema Roundup featuring Who Killed Santa? And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's finish up catching up on some award films. And let's talk about one that's kind of notorious. It's made a little bit of news, and that is She Said. Two reporters from the New York Times investigate the allegations of ongoing sexual misconduct of Harvey Weinstein.
What is it exactly that we're looking at here?
These young women walked into what they all had reason to believe were business meetings.
He kept trying to touch me.
I asked him to leave me alone.
Instead, they say he met them with threats and sexual demands.
People have tried to write this story before. He kills it every time.
Harvey adamantly denies any allegation of assault.
He played people. He was a master manipulator.
Now, for those of you in the know of box office, you'll know She Said is notorious because it notoriously flopped. I mean, and it flopped hard. I don't know what the statistic is, but it's like one of the worst wide openings ever. I mean, it's made almost nothing from a movie standpoint. It's a couple million dollars, but that's not enough to balance out a big movie like this. But here's the thing. It's a really good film. But I think She Said didn't do well, not because it's a bad movie. I mean, like I said, it's a very good movie. But I think She Said is exactly the kind of movie that isn't going to do well in theaters right now. It's the flip side of Top Gun Maverick. Top Gun Maverick played well because it had the stunts, it had real life flying sequences, which was par for the course back in 1986, but it's brand new now because everybody does it in CGI. It had great cinematography. It had that patriotic plot. You know, it was a real crowd-pleasing movie with lots of action and memorable characters. And She Said is a slow-burn journalism movie. It reminded me a lot of Spotlight. I mean, a lot. Really reminded me a lot of Spotlight. And I can't remember how well Spotlight did. I mean, it won the awards, but it was not a huge moneymaker because it's a slow-burn movie. And these adult fare films do not do well. And part of the reason is because I think this thing goes on VOD this week or something, or next week. It's a very well done movie, but there's no reason to see it in the theaters. There's no action to it. There's no spectacle to it. It's a slow burn story that you can watch at home and get the same thing out of it. And there's also the other thing that I think one of the reasons it didn't do well is it's you can't spoil this movie. We know what happens to Harvey Weinstein. Heck, he's in the news now because they're still going through all these trials. You know Harvey Weinstein fell from grace. This is not anything surprising. And the other thing with it is Spotlight was sensational because you had a chance to look into what was going on in the Catholic Church in hiding these sexual abuse cases. And even if you knew what happened in the news, it was alarming and surprising to watch that kind of play out on screen. Whereas this one, we know what happens. And on top of it, nobody's surprised that Harvey Weinstein was doing this. Everybody knows that the Hollywood is full of Lotharios. I mean, there's a reason there's a term called a casting couch. I mean, it shouldn't be there, and it's deplorable that it exists. But this stuff has been going on since before sound in movies, coercing young starlets and, you know, forcing yourself on them. I mean, I'm not defending that behavior at all, but that always happened. I mean, look at Louis B. Mayer, all the stories that came out about Louis B. Mayer and what a sleazebag he was. Harvey Weinstein hardly has a corner of the market. It's just that he was able to really wield his power and do it at such a widespread thing. And it's not that he even kept it that secret. Everybody knew about it. And I guess that's one of the reasons why the movie didn't do well, because people were like, yeah, big surprise. Harvey Weinstein's a sleazebag. Tell us something we don't know. So I think those are the reasons that didn't do well, but it's a very well done movie. It shows the meticulous nature reporters need to follow to do real honest journalism. I'm not talking about InfoWars garbage. I'm not talking about something where you just slap it on a blog. I'm talking about investigating something, going to the sources and then verifying the sources and doing fact checking and making sure, I mean, your number's up if you mess it up. And that's what real journalism is about. Not the do your research because I went on Google and I spent 3 hours reading about vaccines or something like that. So, I mean, She Said it's a very well done movie. At times it gets a little bit preachy, and at times it does sort of puff out its chest in this weird feminist rage. I mean, it's justified, but it's you can never throw that in a movie and make it subtle. So, but I mean, it's very well done, and Zoe Kazan and Carey Mulligan do a great job in the role. It maybe gets a little bit long at the end because they're following the story. They're following what happened, and things don't always wrap up as easily and quickly and as nicely as you want to for a movie. So they do struggle a bit in the third act, but still it's a very good film. It's an excellent slow burn story of how real journalism works, even if there are a few surprises. So seek this movie out. Watch it. It's a good film. It's just not something that was going to be a hit in theaters. So I'm going to say She Said totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent!
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the home cinema roundup. This week, I want to talk about this new Netflix special. It's part of the series Murderville. And it's Who Killed Santa? A Murderville Murder Mystery. The police in Murderville get new celebrity trainees in this improvised mystery about a murder of a man playing Santa Claus.
Don't be distracted by all this Christmas crap. You're here for threat assessment. Mayor Palmer, don't you worry about it. Terry Seattle is on the case!
Santa Claus is dead.
Jason, why don't you tell Maya everything
that's really
happened?
Wait, really? Santa Claus is dead?
I talked about Murderville, it was probably about 8 months ago on this show. It's a series on Netflix, and there's only like 6 episodes, and it's a great series. It stars Will Arnett as Terry Seattle. He's a detective, and he gets a new partner in every episode, a new trainee. And it's always a celebrity guest. Like on the TV series, like one of the celebrity guests was Conan O'Brien. And he plays Conan O'Brien. And like Sharon Stone was one, Ken Jeong was one. And what they do is they're not given a script. They just show up and they have to react. So it's kind of a daring thing for an actor to do because actors love scripts. But I mean, you get a lot of comedians who can go on the fly. And then they have to respond and try and figure out the murder. And you can watch it and try and figure out the murder yourself. And they guess who the murderer is. And, you know, at the end they reveal and you find out whether the actors got it right or not. And on the TV series, some did and some didn't. And this is a hour long. This one's like, you know, it's like 51 minutes. And the original series, which like I said, there's 6 episodes, they're about half hour each. So it's a longer form. And instead of just having one special guests, they have, well, 3, but 2 are the main ones. You've got Jason Bateman and Maya Rudolph as these trainees, and they just show up. They literally have no idea what's going on. And it's meant to be silly, and it's over the top, and the whole bits at times, they're trying to get each other to break. They're trying to get them to laugh. They do outrageous and crazy things. And, you know, sometimes, you know, you don't want it to be too much like a Jimmy Fallon Saturday Night Live sketch where they laugh at everything. But I think like when Maya Rudolph shows up, she just has no idea what's happening and she kind of loses it at the beginning. And then she kind of gets herself together and becomes funny. Jason Bateman, you know, God bless him, man. He hit the ground running and he was game and he bounced around and he's a smart cookie as an improv actor. I think he did a great job in this. But it's fun. If you've watched Murderville, You know what you're getting into. I find this to be one of the funniest shows I've seen this year. I wish they would make more, but there's only like 6 episodes. But they did a Christmas special. It's on Netflix right now. You can, well, don't stop the show. You know, wait till the show's over. Wait till Fat Guys at the Movie's done. Then go to Netflix and watch it. And let me know. Send me an email to HalloweenEnds@FatGuysAtTheMovies.com and let me know how Tom Atkins can fit into a Murderville movie with Michael Myers or something like that. But yeah, no, this is a fun series. If you've not watched Murderville, check it out. This series is very funny. It's unexpected and it's clever. And it doesn't overstay its welcome. Even this double long episode, it doesn't overstay its welcome. I mean, Will Arnett, that's the other thing. Will Arnett, he like commits to this movie. He fully commits to more comedy hijinks in this hilarious Christmas special. It's fantastic. I loved it. I want more Murderville. Please, Netflix, give it to me. I mean, hey, you can have me as a guest. I'll do it for scale. So anyways, Who Killed Santa? A Murderville Murder Mystery. Totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent!
And that's it for this week. I need to go. Next week, I'm going to be talking about the films Babylon and Puss in Boots, The Last Wish. And until then, have a fat time at the movies or at home.